I'm Kevin Kelly. The show is Live and Local. On the program today, we're going to be talking later on with Scott Schwartz and Robin Kirtan about the American Music Month celebrations at the University of Illinois and throughout Champaign-Urbana, and specifically about the Granny's Porch concert at the Virginia Theater in downtown Champaign, which is Friday night. And in the first portion of the show, a conversation with Sharon Huff and Gary Shaw, who lead the University Concert Band and Symphonic Wind Ensemble, respectively. At Millikan University, they're giving a concert tomorrow night in Decatur. It's Live and Local on FM 90.9.
Thank you.
There was a performance of a piece by James Curnow called Réjouissance. James Curnow was briefly a director of bands at the University of Illinois. That performance, given by the Western Illinois University Symphonic Wind Ensemble, its director is John R. Dougal, and the conductor for that performance was Holly Hubbs. That piece is going to close out the portion by the University Concert Band at Millikan University on their joint concert tomorrow night in Decatur with the Symphonic Wind Ensemble of Millikan. The conductors are respectively Sharon Huff and Gary Shaw. Sharon teaches applied tuba and euphonium, brass methods, tuba euphonium ensemble, and also supervises music education student teachers at Millikan, and of course she conducts the concert band. Gary Shaw, professor of music, chair of winds, brass, and percussion at Millikan. He also teaches trombone there, and also conducts the Decatur Youth Symphony Orchestra and the Greater Decatur Youth Band, which is a summer program for students. I talked this morning with Sharon Huff and Gary Shaw about tomorrow night's concert by those two ensembles, and started our conversation by asking Gary simply to let us know about the general overview of the bands at Millikan.
We have two ensembles at Millikan. Millikan's an undergraduate institution with about 2,400 students, and 300 of those students are music majors. So we have the Symphonic Wind Ensemble, which I conduct, and the University Concert Band that Sherry conducts. And both groups play two concerts shared each semester, and then we do some touring to local schools and sometimes to more exotic places from time to time. So this is our second concert of the semester, and we are performing at Albert Taylor Hall, which is a smaller 250-seat theater on campus rather than Kirkland Fine Arts Center where we usually play. So it'll be a more intimate setting. Students who are music majors and minors and non-majors audition and perform in both bands. And in fact, some of the non-music majors have been our best ensemble members over the years, really highly committed to playing and take lessons and are, you know, valuable to the ensembles.
Well, it's been interesting to me as I've had different conversations with Millikan faculty over this the course of this program since February to discover that there seems to be a very high percentage of non-music majors in the music programs.
Yes, and I've noticed, especially now that we have more pre-professional, pre-medical programs, students wanting to go to med school and physical therapy and things like that, we seem to have a lot of science majors that want to keep playing their instrument, and they're active in the band program as well.
So the differences between the two bands, the concert band, the wind ensemble, besides there's a level difference, I assume?
Right. Well, you know, Millikan being a smaller school, I think what happens, you know, the wind ensemble gets for the most part, the more advanced players and, you know, better instrumentation so that we have complete sections all the way through. And the concert band, it will vary. Some years the ensemble will have a very good balance, and other years there could be some holes. Like this year, we don't have a full horn section in the concert band, but still play a very high level of literature and a high level of performance with both groups.
Is there a difference in approach at all to repertoire beyond level, beyond perhaps difficulty?
No, I think that Sherry and I both have the same philosophical opinion about trying to play the best literature that we can play and expose our students to the best music, regardless of the level. What do you think, Sherry?
Oh, I would agree, although I think the wind ensemble, just because of the makeup of the group, is probably suited to a slightly higher level of difficulty and perhaps slightly more esoteric literature in a way.
I noticed that you both have on your program some music by Frank Ticelli. In fact, there's 1, 2, 3 pieces on the program by him. What can you tell us about his music generally, and what appealed to you particularly to have so many pieces on one concert.
Well,
Sherry, go ahead.
I surely would. I'd say Frank DeKelly is one of the major forces in American band composition right today, and he's actually a professor of composition at University of Southern California right now. He's not very old either. He's been on the scene not for a great length of time, but he's written some very significant works for concert band and for wind ensemble. And I think it's interesting, Gary mentioned that we have somewhat the same philosophical approach to programming and to working with our groups. And as a result, I'd like to tell you that we plan to feature the music of Frank DeKelly, but the truth is we just both happened to pick programs that featured some of his works on this particular concert. Some of his other works, I know that Gary has performed many of Frank DeKelly's works, and I like to do a DeKelly work one or two every year. But at any rate, we ended up having three selections by Mr. DeKelly, so it was a happy coincidence.
So what's interesting about his music?
Go ahead,
Gary, why don't you...
Well, I think the way he uses the winds, brass, and percussion to get really different colors out of the ensemble is what attracts me to his music. I think that he's very, very precise what he asks for, you know, forte piano, sforzandos, decays on notes, and the combinations of instruments that he uses together. The music sounds fresh and new and different. I think, you know, often you can listen to two or three band pieces and very easily say it all sounds alike. And I think that DeKelly brings some new sounds and combinations and colors that are really nice, especially in the keyboard percussion part of the ensemble. So that's one of the things that I like. And I think that he's written a lot of pieces that are different from each other, and he's written some very good pieces at very easy levels that middle school bands can play, all the way through some extremely challenging pieces that are appropriate for university wind ensembles with graduate students and you know, a few professional ensembles that are there. So he is one of the contemporary composers that I like the most right now.
I really enjoy the energy that he infuses into his compositions, and part of that comes from the choice of meters that he uses and the mixing of symmetrical meters with asymmetrical meters. And I think that's also one of the features of his music that my students really enjoy too, is being able to work up those rhythms and to work with the rhythms and be able to demonstrate some excellent energetic pulsations that DeKelly puts into his compositions.
For listeners who might not know what is meant by asymmetrical meters, what do you think is the effect on the listener of that? I mean, you gave a little idea of energy, but...
Right. I think it's perhaps just not what one might be used to in the majority of common songs that one uses. For example, in, say, Christmas carols or folk tunes, most of those are symmetrical meters that just sound like they flow regularly, or a waltz that would be a symmetrical meter and sounds like it flows regularly. And it would be as if you threw in an extra beat that didn't seem to belong every now and again. So I wouldn't say necessarily that it unsettles the audience or the listener, but it does add a little bit of a kick every now and then. And one asymmetrical meter that's quite popular or quite well known, or one piece, I should say, that's written in asymmetrical meter would be the Rondo a la Turk, or the Blue Rondo a la Turk that was done in the jazz idiom. And actually, it just so happens that Sundance, this piece by DeKelly, utilizes that asymmetrical feel.
You know, that's funny, because as you were talking about it, that is exactly the tune that was going through my head.
Oh, fantastic.
It's sort of like you have a limp almost. One, two, da, 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 da. If you were going to try to walk to this thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, we were just listening to that tune the other day. It's a Dave Brubeck tune.
Yes.
You're listening to a conversation with Sharon Huff and Gary Shaw, who lead respectively the University Concert Band and the Symphonic Wind Ensemble at Millikan University in Decatur. They are giving a joint concert tomorrow night at 7:30 in the Albert Taylor Theater on the Millikan campus there. And I thought I'd take a break there since they were talking about the music of Frank Tekeli and play you one of his pieces, which happens to be a performance by the Millikan University Symphonic Wind Ensemble with Gary Shaw conducting. This is Tekeli's piece called Postcard, and you're hearing it on Live and Local, and it very much represents some of these asymmetrical rhythms that Sharon Huff was talking about.
Thank you.
music by Frank Ticelli called Postcard, performed by the Millikan University Symphonic Wind Ensemble, conducted by Gary R. Shaw. And Gary Shaw will be leading that ensemble in a concert along with the University Concert Band at Millikan University tomorrow night at 7:30 at the Albert Taylor Theater in Decatur. And they'll be playing three pieces by Ticelli on that program: The Sundance, an arrangement of Amazing Grace, and a piece called Nitro. This is Live and Local on FM 90.9. I spoke this morning with Sharon Huff and Gary Shaw about that concert, and let's hear the rest of that conversation. It's interesting to me, I used to play in bands when I was in high school and college, and it's been a long time since I've done that, but some of my memories, most vivid memories of specific pieces of music, are not from my orchestra playing, but from my band playing. And I think that part of the reason for that is that the bands tend to play a whole lot more current music than orchestras do. Any idea why? I mean, why would you say that is?
Actually, I guess I wouldn't say that that's as much my experience with orchestras. I've heard them play a lot of contemporary works, but no doubt the history of the groups is behind that occurrence, shall we say, because, of course, orchestras have been in existence for so many hundreds more years than bands have, so they've just got a much larger body of work written for them by many more well-known, notable composers, and the bands are just a much more recent phenomena.
I have something to interject about the subject. I think it is true, you know, especially in the past 20 years, the number of composers that are writing some really very good pieces for band, wind ensemble, has really been great. But at the same time, we are starting to have some standard pieces in the literature, and I find it disappointing that often groups, especially public school groups, are always just buying new music, playing new music that's being published, and not, you know, incorporating in their programs pieces by Hindemith and Holst and Vaughan Williams, and even composers that are slightly more contemporary, like Norman Della Gioia. He wrote quite a few really excellent band pieces. So I don't see those pieces on programs as much. So I think it would be good to have a balance and to, you know, continue the tradition like the orchestra does of playing pieces that are part of the repertoire or should be.
Real standards in the repertoire.
Right, right.
When you, Gary or Sharon, go out and adjudicate or guest conduct orchestra or bands, particularly, I'm guessing, Gary, you may do orchestras as well. In high school programs in particular, do you make some attempt when you program to try to remedy that perception?
Yeah, I do. I do. I mean, I always, if I'm asked to guest conduct, I always would want to have some input in the program. And I do, because I think there are pieces that the students enjoy and, you know, the directors involved will appreciate if they're used. I'm not opposed to new pieces at all. It's just I think we have, you know, so many good composers. Another one I was thinking, Howard Hanson, and one of the pieces we're playing, Solitary Dancer by Warren Benson. I think, you know, there's no reason for us not to continue to play those pieces, so I do try to do that, and usually have good results when I do.
I think you can almost always pick a winner if you pick one of the standards of band literature that's been around for years and years. But I also, if you don't mind, I wanted to interject something. As we were chatting here, I realized that I misspoke talking about the asymmetrical meters. We went down the road about Frank Ticelli's asymmetrical meters, and I attached this Blue Rondo a la Turk to Sundance, which is Ticelli's piece, and it's actually another piece that we're doing on the concert band program. It's a piece by John Fannin is the one that uses the Blue Rondo a la Turk. It's a piece called Fanfare Nueve, And John Fannin, actually, I don't, Gary, I just have come across his music. Have you been familiar with his music at all?
No.
His piece, this is the one that's on Blue Rondo a la Turk, but it does, I think it. I was attracted to his piece of music, perhaps because uses a lot of the same kind of asymmetrical meters and rhythmic devices that Tekelly's does. So I wanted to apologize for that error in speaking.
Except for people who are in your concert, I bet nobody would have known.
Well, you never know who might be listening to WILL. Yes, you have a pretty advanced audience.
Well, we certainly like to think so. Gary, you mentioned the piece by Warren Benson, "Solitary Dancer." Are there others on the program that you would say are on among these standard band pieces?
Yes, I had decided that I wanted to perform a theme and variations by Schoenberg because I'd never conducted it, and last summer I started listening to it and talking to friends like Sherry, and thought it was really a worthwhile piece that I'd like to present to the students. And then I thought, well, how about doing kind of a historical program? So except for the Tekelly piece, the other pieces on the program are older. We're playing Trauer Symphony, which was written for band in 1844 by Richard Wagner, and it's the only piece that he wrote for the band. And I had conducted it quite a while ago, and I think it's absolutely beautiful. And I can see why it's not performed, at least by high school groups, because it's really very, very difficult, sensitive, slow, but really, really very, very lovely piece. And then Warren Benson, I've known about for quite a while. He was a percussionist in the Detroit Symphony, and he taught at Ithaca College and then at Eastman. He was on the composition faculty, and also he was one of the first to write for and to direct percussion ensembles, which are very big at Millikan. So the Solitary Dancer is based on a single motivic idea that's carried throughout the whole ensemble. So it's really almost like Ravel's Bolero, the same idea. Very challenging to keep the tempo and to keep the rhythm going as it's passed around the whole ensemble. So those are two pieces that I think are worth performing, and glad that I'm getting to do them again.
It's sort of one of the pieces that you're doing, the Schoenberg Opus 43A, kind of gives a direct connection between me, actually, and the University of Illinois, because back when I was working on my master's and doctorate at the University of Illinois, I performed that piece with the U of I concert band, or the symphonic band, rather, with James Keene as the director. So when I heard that you were playing that piece, I think that's the last time I had much contact with it. So it harkened me back into my days at grad school at the U of I.
And how did that strike you when you played it?
Oh, you mean the piece?
Yeah.
Oh, I enjoyed it immensely. I thought it was a tremendously complicated, complex work, and really a work of art, very intricate and not at all like most of the music I knew of Schoenberg, because, of course, most people would think of Tone Rose and 12-tone music when they think of Schoenberg. But this piece certainly does make use of a lot of very small germs of thematic material that are interwoven throughout the piece, and it certainly lives up, of course, to its title of A Theme and Variations, the little thematic pieces of material that are changed all the way through the piece.
I noticed it was written 2 years before he died. Was he sort of getting out of his 12-tone period at that point?
Well, not being a Schoenberg scholar, I do think I recall reading that he turned a little bit back to tonality at the end.
Got a little more melodic.
Yeah, maybe a little bit like Stravinsky with his neoclassicism.
It's really romantic music in a lot of ways. It's in the key of G minor throughout, very tonal. So it took a while for the students to realize that it was a tonal piece. We had to start playing more correct notes for them to realize that. But technically, it's very difficult. And I was thinking, it would probably be in my top five band pieces that I've conducted as far as technical difficulty.
Really?
Yes.
And it's the last on the program, so they're going to have something to live up to make sure the audience leaves
with
good sounds in the ears.
Yes.
Well, it sounds like a wonderfully varied program, and I hope that this conversation perhaps helps fill that auditorium for the concert. It's Wednesday night, the University Concert Band and Symphonic Wind Ensemble at Millikan University, the concert band conducted by Sharon Huff, the wind ensemble conducted by Gary Shaw. They're both with me here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. And the concert starts at what time?
7:30 p.m.
And is there a charge?
No, it's free and open to the public.
Excellent. Well, I thank you both for joining me on the show today.
Thank you, Kevin.
Yes, thank you, Kevin.
And you're welcome to both of them. That was a conversation I had with Sharon Huff and Gary Shaw of Millikan University, leading the concert band and the Symphonic Wind Ensemble tomorrow night at 7:30. Just talked with them earlier today. And the next on the show, we have a chat with Scott Schwartz, who is archivist at the University of Illinois SUSE Archives and also coordinator for the annual American Music Month celebrations. And one of those participants is Robin Kirtan, who is actually participating in at least a couple of ways. Specifically, we want to talk about their concert that is part of that celebration this Friday evening in downtown Champaign. It's called Spare Some Change, Granny's Porch Looks at the 1930s Through America's Music at the Virginia Theater in downtown Champaign. That starts at 7:30 on Friday night. So thanks to both to Scott and Robin for coming in on Live and Local today.
Well, thanks for having us.
Yeah.
Hi. Scott, how long have you been doing these American Music Month things?
Well, American Music Month was started in 2004 with the SUSE Sesquicentennial, and we've been doing it every year. And goodness, this is our sixth one now. I can't count yet.
You have to do it on the fingers.
Yeah, I have to do it on my fingers, yeah. Quite a few so far.
And how long, remind me of this, how long have you been at the university?
I've been here since September of 2003.
So this came up right after you got here. Is this something you brought with you from Smithsonian Institution where you were previously?
No, it really came about. The SUSE Sesquicentennial was in 2004. They were planning for that. And we had already established a Center for American Music, and I thought, well, geez, how about we declare a month, like April for Jazz Appreciation Month, one just for music in America. So got some help with Senator Durbin and got a congressional resolution passed declaring November as American Music Month, and did that in 2004. Of course, it helps to have SUSE as kind of the impetus to get everybody to agree to do it, and we've been doing it since.
So was that declared nationally or in Illinois?
Well, actually, the state also passed it, so I have two. Naomi Jacobson got the one passed in the state, and then I had Senator Durbin help get the resolution passed in Congress.
So it is a national, this is the national month we're in right now.
Well, supposedly, yeah.
Supposedly, mm-hmm. But not everybody deals with it as you're dealing with it.
Well,
your concept was not just to do it at the university, but to involve various organizations throughout the community.
Well, that's right. To involve as many individuals and ensembles to focus on all of the great music we have in this wonderful community. And Robin Kirtan was someone I ran into early on, and we've just connected and have become very good friends. And she's been an active participant in every year mm-hmm. we've done this. So, and we just keep. We come together every January and talk about what are we doing next year. So
no, that's not true, Scott.
No?
We started in October talking about what are we doing
okay.
in 2010.
All right. You catch me.
Robin is a director of the Community Center for the Arts in downtown Urbana, mm-hmm. Newly relocated to the Independent Media Center.
Right. We're occupying a good bit of the second floor in the people who don't know where the Independent Media Center is often call it the old post office building in Urbana.
Right next to, just north of Lincoln Square.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It used to be Lincoln Square Mall. Now it's called Lincoln Square Village. And it is still a post office, but only in a tiny portion of it.
That's right.
And the rest is a really multi-use facility. And the Community Center for the Arts offers all kinds of programs, not only musical to the community. And if you want information, what's that website? Robin, you might as well give a plug for your school there.
Thanks. It's www.c-4a. So that's c-4a.org.
.org, yeah. And lots of offerings there, including the increasingly well-known Bodacious String Band, mm-hmm. which is something you started with young people. And they are among the performers on Friday night's Granny's Porch Concert. Ever since I saw this the first time, I've been curious, where does the name Granny's Porch come from?
Well, it's easy. When we first started thinking about this, this would have been 2005.
Yeah.
We were talking about local musicians. I think we were just talking over beers at our favorite place, and I said, we're looking for a setting kind of like, Granny's front porch. Everyone would, after dinner, sit down and play. Granny would be cleaning the dishes, and Grandpa would pull out the fiddle, and then suddenly the neighbor would come over with a guitar. The kids would stop messing around and sit down on the porch, and before you knew it, you had the entire neighborhood sitting on your porch playing all types of music. And at that point, the whole idea was Granny's porch.
Yeah, and that image kind of signaled the communal aspect that we were looking for, because the biggest part of this has always been who's local, what musical community can we pull from to bring together. And the show itself takes kind of a variety show format in a different way. So the first couple we modeled closely on the Grand Ole Opry, and we had fake sponsors. So if you haven't ever heard the Grand Ole Opry, listeners on the station may well have heard the Prairie Home Companion, which
that's
is also
that's
modeled
what I was
on
thinking
it.
Of,
yeah. So we had fake sponsors, and we had different featured performers and narration, and it's just fun. Mm-hmm. And the last couple of years were doing more topical sessions, but it's still a variety, bringing lots of different community groups together to present for our community.
That's right, yeah. And the Bodacious absolutely has to be on this show. They're just a great children's group that, we just love to have on it. It's all ages, mm-hmm. From the very young, the 6 and 7 year olds that
yeah.
are playing on 1/10 size instruments to the high school students, and they're all sitting there playing traditional fiddle tunes and having a good time. It's such a joy to watch them play.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
Another group that Robin is involved in, and fairly new name anyway for sort of various incarnations of some of the same players sometimes, the Flexible Flyers. Mm-hmm. Where did you come up with that name?
Oh, we were, Tom Foe and I play, we're sort of the core of the Flexible Flyers, and we had been playing with a different group under the name of Oberon the Possum King, but the way bands kind of come and go, sometimes they just reform. And we had a gig and we needed a name, and he said, well, I've always wanted to call the group the Flexible Flyers. And I said, well, fine. So we used that as just an ad hoc gig band name, and it kind of stuck. And one of our friends that we played with sort of encouraged us to have it kind of fit the paradigm that he suggested, because he goes, well, it's always you two, and then it's like a lot of other people too. So that's where the flexible part comes in.
What's the type of music or types of music?
That's kind of flexible too.
Okay.
Yeah. I always play violin and viola, but we do a lot of different styles. Tom plays banjo and accordion, and actually Friday he'll be playing guitar. And then we have guitar players and other, mandolin players. Sometimes Chad Dunn has joined us on his percussion box. And we have Friday night, we have an interesting new flyer. Jacob Barton will be performing on the instrument of his own invention called the Utterbot.
The what?
The Utterbot.
And, spelled?
Utter, like U-D-D-E-R, and bot, like the first part of bottle, which kind of describes it. It's a bottle with the bottom cut off, and then you attach a latex glove to it and fill it with water. So when you squeeze the glove, it modulates the water level, and he can change the pitch. And it sounds like kind of a funny little thing. But he's actually a virtuoso on this thing. The first time he came and sat in with us, he was keeping up with me on the reels. Fast, precise, clean, and it's kind of an interesting sound. Sometimes it sounds like a human voice singing, and sometimes it sounds a bit like a theremin. And it's just a really cool instrument. And so we'll be playing 1930s standards for swing fiddle, guitar, and utterbutt on Friday.
That sounds mildly obscene.
Well, you know, I'm sure he has to field Snickers all the time, but it's a fascinating sound, and he's really very, very good at playing it. It's worth hearing.
Scott, you and I got together yesterday and pulled a few tunes out of our recording library here. Why don't you tell me why we pulled Sweet Georgia Brown?
Well, Sweet Georgia Brown is one of the tunes that Robin's group's going to be playing. So, you know, yeah, it would be appropriate to hear a little snippet to give the audience a chance to get a sense of the tune. I think this is what a Django Reinhardt, 1930s performance.
Yeah, but he didn't have an utterbutt with him.
No, he didn't have an utterbutt, but he did play a mean guitar.
Yeah, he wasn't bad.
Django Reinhardt, Sweet Georgia Brown here on Live and Local. Django Reinhardt and Stefan Grappelli with the quintet of the Hot Club of France playing an arrangement of Sweet Georgia Brown here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. You can hear a very different arrangement played by, the Flexible Flyers, and complete with this unique instrument called the utterbutt, which really is going to give me the giggles if I think about it very much. On Friday night's concert at the Virginia Theater in downtown Champaign, Spare Some Change, Granny's Porch looks at the 1930s through America's Music is one of the many offerings sponsored by the University of Illinois Sousa Archives and Center for American Music for American Music Month, which is this month of November. Scott Schwartz is with us. He's the archivist for this whole thing. And Robin Kirtan, who directs the Center for the Community Center for the Arts in downtown Urbana, and is a core member of the Flexible Flyers. Also on that concert, Bodacious String Band, as we've mentioned. And who else, Scott, is on that concert Friday night?
Well, you've got Amasong singing several wonderful pieces. The whole theme for American Music Month this year is music. Not only music in America, but women's impact on music in America. So we're really focusing on women in music this year. Mm-hmm. And having Amasong perform at Granny's Porch gives us an opportunity to hear some wonderful tunes. Sarah Ogen Gunning, the 25 Cents You Paid Me Down, a strike song that she had written in the 30s.
Strike is a bad word right now.
Yeah. Wow, that it is. Yes, but I guess, I'll just bite my tongue for the moment.
Don't hurt yourself.
Other groups, we've got the Parkland College State Street Strutters playing. He'll start out with a great tune whose name has just suddenly escaped me. They will be doing Farewell Blues as they're ending that set. You've got Ron Hedlund and Eric Dahlheim doing Brother Can You Spare a Dime and Pennies from Heaven and Kate Smith's God Bless America, all tunes that would have been heard in the 30s. You have, who else am I forgetting? We've got the Vintage Brass Band, straight from Springfield. Group played last year, actually right against Robin's group, kind of a back-to-back kind of competition, and the audience loved it, and we thought we would bring them back. Their connection in the concert is really bringing us back to an older time, so we'll be listening to music turn of the century, because the 1930s was such a dark hour in American culture. Many people wanted to think about happier times of past. So we're using the vintage brass band to play tunes of that period, like In the Good Old Summertime, and what was it? The Baseball Quickstep. And then, let's see, who else?
Don't forget the Heading Home band.
The family and I, the Schwartz family, Heading Home, I'm playing a couple tunes. We're going to do two Jimmy Rogers tunes. Some consider him the father of country music. Other would say Ray Acuff is. But nevertheless, we're doing a couple Jimmy Rogers tunes and a piece, High Flyin' Stomp, by the Texas High Flyers, all of the 30s, to kind of give a flavor. And I think we're going to end it with, help me out. I'm losing the name now.
Of what you're doing?
No, what the group is doing.
Happy Days.
Happy Days, there we go. Yeah, we're
here again.
Yes, Happy Days are here again. Shoot.
Yeah, it was interesting when we were planning this year's celebration, because last year we did the music of Lincoln, and it lined up with the Lincoln anniversary really nicely, and it was a very effective program. And so we were thinking, wow, what can we do that'll be that good? And so we were identifying what made it effective, and we found out that part of it was that the Lincoln time period had so many parallels with what we're going through today. And so we thought, well, what are the issues today, and how can that affect music? And I think Tom suggested, well, you know, the music, or I think I said, oh, well, the economy is what's on everybody's mind right now. And Tom goes, ah, the Great Depression, music of the 30s. And as soon as that was out in the air, we all knew, oh, yeah, that's what we're doing.
That's right.
And it's good. We like to look and see how you can look back and find sort of a comfort. And got through it then, we'll get through it now. Mm-hmm. And it's just kind of fascinating to find the historic parallels, too.
And music is a great way to get through it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we think about it as just being a very dark era, and there, nevertheless, people found time to enjoy, and music was that tool.
And there are some great tunes. Actually, I believe, maybe with the exception of the brass band, all the groups have made an effort to do music that would have been heard during that time period.
Well, here's an example which Scott mentioned fleetingly, Farewell Blues by...
Paul Maris actually recorded and composed in 1922, but became very popular in the 30s, in New Orleans, Rhythm Kings. It's a great tune, and it's a jazz standard.
And here is a performance from 1927 by King Oliver's Dixie Syncopators on Live and Local. Performance by King Oliver's Dixie Syncopators from 1927, a tune called Farewell Blues, which is going to be played by the State Street Strutters on Friday night's Granny's Porch concert at the Virginia Theater in downtown Champaign. And you heard it here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. And we just have about half a minute to wrap things up here and say thanks to Scott Schwartz and Robin Kierton, who are, is it fair to say you're co-organizers of this concert?
Yes. Concert.
Yeah, definitely.
And also some of the, Scott, please give the website where folks can find out all of the events for American Music Month, because there's lots of exhibits and lots of other concerts as well throughout the community.
Sure. www.library.illinois/SUSA. It's John Philip Sousa, and just click on the link for American Music Month. It's right on the front page.
Yeah, I found it pretty easily. library.illinois/SUSA.
That's right.
That's not too bad.
No.
Well, it's a wonderful celebration that you've done every year now. So counted on our fingers, this is the sixth year, we think. appreciate your coming in on the show. And we hope we'll have a couple of guests later on in the week to talk about, what is Saturday's event called?
Oh, Ballroom Boogie.
The Ballroom Boogie, which is going to be where?
That'll be at the Alumni Center on Saturday from 7 to 11.
Lincoln Avenue in Urbana.
That's right. Bring your dancing shoes.
Thanks very much for coming on the show.
Thanks for having us.